Hello and welcome to the ICTRA Space Podcast. My name is Nora Engelbert. Together with Margret Jäger, I'm welcoming you to today's episode for a series on applied anthropology. Margret and I are eager to show experienced team leads, C-levels, and HR representatives the value anthropology brings to the table to help you thrive your business success. Anthropology is about a holistic view on everything that makes us human and on how we as humans perceive and interact with the world. So, anthropology is key for business fields like customer experience, doctor-patient interactions, communication, team building, the intersection of humans and technology like AI, robotics, or any customer interfaces, and for the analysis and differentiation of culture, structure, and technology in organizations and communities. Lean back, listen in, and let yourself be inspired by the stories and insights from our guests here in the ICTRA space, under the Tree of Life. Hello and warm welcome to the ICTRA Space podcast. Today's episode is our sixth episode on the podcast series on applied anthropology, and we welcome a guest. This is Chiara Bresciani from Italy. She's an anthropologist still doing her research on her PhD thesis and worked in several fields all over the planet, nearly, I'd say, in international research projects for political projects, economic projects, development projects, and also outside of academia in the field of tourism, and of course is teaching anthropology in several universities currently in Denmark. So welcome, Chiara. Welcome from Denmark. How are you today?
Hello, Nora. Thanks for having me. It's a great day here in Denmark and looking forward to our chat. I'm a big fan of your podcast.
Thank you very much. And we are glad that we have people like you who are actually bringing this podcast to life. So today we are curious to hear how you apply anthropology in your life, in your daily work. And as you said, you want to talk about research. So how can someone who's doing research also claim to be an applied anthropologist? Can you give us more insight?
Well, I do believe that first thing is we keep our mind open about research, about how to work interdisciplinary and how, for instance, development initiatives can be based on research, so ground research. For instance, in my case, I've been trained as an anthropologist, but I've been working as a consultant in this research project that I would like to tell you about today. So I was an anthropologist, but I was a consultant in a part of a big project dealing with economic studies.
Okay. What kind of consultancy, what kind of projects have you covered? Before we go in depth in the topic you brought us today, just to give the audience a bit more insight of the broadness you are dealing with and the field of work you are consulting in.
Okay. So I've been employed as part of a big international project led by Western University in Canada. This is a huge, a very big project called Historical Memory of the War in El Salvador. The project involves people and universities and movements and actors in different countries. And I have been part of a small Denmark-based team. We are like three persons. And we have been in charge of developing a small-scale socioeconomic studies of one of these communities. And also we have been in charge of developing a study of traditional medical practices.
Okay, so you were working in the intersection of medical anthropology and economic anthropology?
Yes, exactly. So I would like, for instance, today I would like to talk about the socio-economic studies that we've done, because I think it provides a great example of everything anthropology can accomplish and how anthropology can help not only other disciplines, in this case, economics, but even how it can help providing data to develop further, for instance, aid projects, training projects, so everything that can be used in, for instance, international cooperation, as in this case, because it is important that everything that is planned when you do a project abroad is actually targeting the real needs of a local population. Very often, in fact, a lot of time and energy and money is wasted in cross-country project because a lot of interesting projects that work perfectly on paper, they are not actually adapted to each single context. So when we lack these prior studies, when we lack these feasibility studies, we might miss peculiarities of that context. So we end up organizing projects, for instance, that are not suitable and are actually failing after a couple of years.
Okay, so to summarize it to our audience who are probably also more from business and economic sector and like Margaret in her community, her network from the health sector, just to make sure you are so today showing us how you and your consultancy work, your analysis has contributed to set up effective projects. So to increase the efficacy of actions in developmental work, correct?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So yeah, you already mentioned a few things. You said Canada, Western University, you mentioned socioeconomic studies, and you mentioned El Salvador. So take us with you on your adventure. What exactly have you been doing? Why is El Salvador, and what is the context and your outcome of your research?
El Salvador is a small, actually the smallest country in Central America. It is known mostly, very sadly, for the civil war that plagued the country between 1980 until 1992. So this, what everything that happened in the civil war is still pretty much there. People are still dealing with trauma, many a trauma that was never healed. And actually, in many cases, because of the final peace agreements, there has been a kind of a lack of justice.
So also aspects of law and international law, local law are part of your research or?
They are all part of the Canadian project. So the Canadian project, the main part is about documentation. So they collect, they interview the survivors, the witnesses, they try to map, like to geolocalize where massacres have occurred. They work for the justice system. They also work a lot for the memory, for historical memory. So they try to, they publish book. They are working on opening a museum and they are creating monuments in coordination with local artists and the communities. Actually, the approach is a participatory approach. So local communities and organizations and local authorities are all pretty much involved in this co-creation project. So the point is that without historical memory, because this trauma has never been digested, has never been processed. So in order to go on, in order for the country to heal, and for sure for the survivors to heal, you have to deal with historical trauma in a way that hasn't been done yet. So our work, the Danish team work in this was dealing with the economic part, so to say, because again, in El Salvador, a lot of money has been invested throughout the years for project of development and help and so on. But many case, I mean, while in many cases this has been very successful, but in other cases, the projects that had been funded did not go on after the end of the funding, which means that they haven't been able to create solutions for development that could sustain themselves with the community. So our work was to do a feasibility study in the community, study, mm-hmm. for instance, in my case, specifically small entrepreneurs, to understand mm-hmm. the needs and characteristics of the community and small entrepreneurs specifically. So what is what they need? How can we help mm-hmm. them? What activities we might be more interested in?
Okay. May I quickly just interrupt you, because I just now realize I made a big mistake in the beginning of our talk, because to the audience, of course, we are not just the two of us here, being Chiara and myself, but we also have Margaret as our co-host. So hello, Margaret. I'm so sorry that we jumped in.
Hi, everybody. No worries, Nora. I'm here and I'm with you and I'm listening. It's super interesting, Chiara. Thank you.
And because of what you just said, Chiara, I was thinking of Margaret and the first interview or the first episode we had where Margaret was talking about her work. And you mentioned that you really liked her statement that often culture is blamed or ethnicity is blamed for misunderstandings or things not working. And what Margaret said, that's often very wrong, because it's usually most of the time, the structure, so the system itself. So Margaret, what does it resonate with you, what Chiara is saying, that she's studying the context there?
It does, of course. Like, context matters always. And everything that is done without considering the context, everywhere in the world, for any issue, is not working at the end. Because especially when you invent or think of something in one country and then you would like to do it in another country, you need really local knowledge and you need local stakeholders involved and you need to know the structures. It's so easy to say, oh, that's cultural. This is like, this is daily what we are hearing out there. And no, most things are not cultural. Most things are structural. They are influenced by politics. As Chiara said, history plays a role. What has happened in a place sometimes a few years ago, sometimes decades ago, is influencing the daily life and business of people today in a place. So it absolutely links. And I'm curious to hear more from Chiara. What was it about these structures and how she could get some results from her research work?
So Chiara, I guess the ball is now with you again.
Well, talking about the economic part of the study, so leaving aside the part on medical anthropology, so what I've done, I've been residing in this community, Las Vueltas, in the Chalatenango region in El Salvador. I've been identifying, together with the help of local authorities, a series of 20 persons having small businesses. I mm-hmm. classified them in three different categories according to the size of the business. And I used the classic ethnographic methods, from long open-ended mm-hmm. interviews to ethnography itself, so observation and all these methods that we know very well, in order mm-hmm. to understand how these people work, how they manage their small businesses. And this, of course, goes together with their ambitions, with their dreams, with their history. For instance, one of the questions that I had was how the experience of the war shaped these small business persons. Mm-hmm. Actually, most of them are women, so from now on, I will refer to them as women. These communities, they had been displaced during the first phase of the war to refugee camps across the border in Honduras. So mm-hmm. The old village was emptied. These people have been living in a very harsh condition in Honduras until when they were finally able to come back around 1986. But still, mm-hmm. I mean, the civil war was still there, but at least they came back to the village and they started working. They started experimenting with new forms of social organization and work organization. For instance, they had common works and the very like shift works that everybody had to do. So they had to work for the community. So one of the questions when asked, when I was working with small entrepreneurs, was how this very peculiar history that the community has impacted their decision of running a business. And yes, the results have been very surprising, very interesting, because, for instance, some women, they run a small business that is economically not viable. They are not losing money, but they aren't earning a lot of money either. So there must be other reasons, other motivations why they keep doing what they're doing. And the key here is that when we talk about benefits and advantages, we have to look further than economic benefits. Some benefits are social, are psychological, and are ideological. For instance, a lot of these people, they keep running a small business because they think they are providing their community with an important service. For instance, they are selling tortillas, they are selling food that they do in their home. So these remind them of the time when they came back to the village from Honduras, and the whole community was collaborating. Everybody was working together. Everyone had their small task that they had to do for the others. So they still think that it is important to work for the benefits of a collectivity. So this is why they do this, even though it might not be viable for the person as a... when we only think in strictly economical terms.
Okay, that is really, really very interesting. Also, when we transfer this observation to the business world, where also often the question is, everything just has to be profit-oriented, and for the CEO, it has to, because he has to ensure that his people get money, get food, can live somewhere, can maintain a family. And also, of course, a profit is important if a company wants to compete in the global market. Now, nevertheless, what you say is, here again, you cannot just motivate people simply by giving them a pay rise, or you cannot make these communities focus on monetary growth or monetary increase, because you have to have a holistic view on the person and what is important for the person. Again, what Margaret and you said, the context. And you are delving even a bit deeper now, mentioning the real relationships people have. So people, the relationship with one another, the relationship to their past, the relationship to the land, I believe you also mentioned earlier.
And Nora and Chiara, and it's so beautiful, because what you're saying is, it's not all about numbers in business world, because CEOs are often interested in the numbers, and it's not enough to look at the numbers. This is the reason why it needs anthropologists in business world, because we have the skills and the knowledge to look beyond numbers. And we know that only going into communities or being part of a team for some time, We can show later the value of teamwork, the value of community engagement, or any other smaller aspects that numbers can never show you, that a survey that's based only on numbers, cross-checking some pre-formulated questions, is not enough to develop the world further. It's beautiful.
Yeah. So just giving lots of money into a region without giving the people the sense of belonging won't help. That's what you're saying, right?
Absolutely.
So, yeah, the bottom line is that people do things for reasons other than money. They can be values, they can be aspirations, dreams, and so on. So the important thing for businesses and for NGOs and for all entities is to keep the human at the center of their action. So if you only reason in terms of money or numbers in general, you are missing the big part, because we work with human or for human. So you have to include, you have to focus your attention and to include the human person in order to understand even how to conduct your business. And this is why I believe the support of the anthropology is really precious, is really valuable here.
Mm-hmm.
We can give a perspective that is quite unique. We do have the tools and the methodologies and the know-how to shed light on the human factor. This is what we do for a worker. This is what we are trained for. And I could really see with my own eyes how this can give you a totally different perspective on a community and on in this case, a small scale economy.
Thank you very much. And both of you, I know you have both conducted field work in Latin America, and I haven't yet been there. So not only thank you, Chiara, for the insight into your work in the nonprofit field, but also on highlighting the context of El Salvador, giving us a bit of insight what life is like over there for people, and making us all aware that there is something more valuable than just the numbers we are all scared about. And to our listeners, thank you again for having been here with us in this new perspective on why anthropology matters. And we are happy to have you in the next episodes on similar topics. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
This podcast is produced in collaboration with the Applied Anthropology Network of the European Association of Social Anthropologists. Thank you for listening in and being with us today. If you wish to learn more about us or our guests, please check on the ICTRA Space website, www.ictra-space.org/en, or contact us directly via info@ictra-space.org. We are happy to answer your questions and to hear your thoughts on the value anthropology has or could have for your daily work. Looking forward to sitting with you again next episode in the ICTRA space under the Tree of Life.